This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 720, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 720. I'm Ryan Halp, sitting in for Josh Flanagan, and this is my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
It's your first show 2020.
Well, yeah, I was due. I'm ready. I'm here.
You're lucky. It's the first hot show.
It's not hot here.
There's a heat wave in Los Angeles. It's almost 90 degrees. When it goes from like 60 to 90, I've got a headache. So just letting you and everyone else know.
A little thermal whiplash?
Yeah, it's not. My body's not happy.
Where's Josh?
He's got things to do.
All right.
What happens in the woods in New Hampshire stays in the woods in New Hampshire.
Ah, yes. It is primary season, after all. We are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics. One of us picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, some listener mail, if we have time, and it's going to be fun. Oh, I haven't looked at the questions yet. Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There will be spoilers. Exercise some caution. This week, Connor, you had the pick.
I did, and I thought it'd be a great hour to talk about comics, but since you're here, noted virologist Dr. Ryan Haupt, we could talk about the coronavirus instead.
Sure. I've got the map up. I'm monitoring the situation closely. I'm washing my hands 20 seconds. Hum the happy birthday song twice while you wash your hands, kids. That's what it is? What? Washing your hands or how long you're supposed to wash your hands for?
How long you're supposed to wash your hands for?
Yeah, 20 seconds. Hum happy birthday twice.
Yeah, well, that's a good tip. Let's move on to the comics.
Shave your mustache if it will block your respirator.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the CDC put out a chart.
Well, let's talk about that after the show. Pick of the Week was John Constantine, Hellblazer number 4. Probably a surprise for some people, although they might have been expecting it to be Josh. I don't think I've ever picked a Hellblazer book in my life, mostly because I didn't read the old Hellblazer book. I think I read one issue of the DCU version book, the Constantine version or whatever it was called.
Yeah, you committed to reading all the number ones.
Yeah, you're right, I did. But this is like the first true Hellblazer comic, and Josh and I have been talking about this series the whole time, and from what I gather, it's pretty close to the spirit. I read three or four trades of the old book, but I didn't read it like regularly like Josh did.
That's about where I'm at, too.
I'm not unfamiliar. I read the Garth Ennis stuff. I'm familiar enough, but I've never followed a book monthly like I am now with this one, which I've been really enjoying. It's from DC's Black Label, and I guess everything's Black Label that they don't really know what to do with. Black Label, again, just Vertigo. So is Hill House. Simon Spurrier and Mateus Bergara, the new artist for this arc with Jordi Belair on colors. Did you read this? Have you been reading this book?
I did, yes. I needed a few extra minutes to prepare to read issue 3 because I didn't realize that was a 3-issue arc and this was the start of a new arc.
But have you been reading the series? Yeah, I guess you have been reading the series.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
So this is the new arc in which John Constantine is decided to embrace a new image. The issue opens rather hilariously where he is being fit for a nice new suit. He's even going the gloves route, which I think is a bit much. And he walks out of the place with his jacket draped over his shoulders like a true London fancy boy, and a shit demon attacks him and ruins his suit. And that's when he meets Tommy Willowtree, his millennial hipster apprentice. This whole issue is basically the culture clash between John Constantine and Tommy Willowtree. John Constantine, the old grumbling, smoking, angry magician, and Tommy Willowtree, the yoga, vegan, man bun, ear spacers, rolled up skinny jeans wearing, scarf wearing hipster musician. And I just loved it.
Yes,
I loved everything about it. This was really funny. The Mateus Bergara art I thought was incredibly atmospheric and interesting. A different kind of style than the previous arc, which I really loved, but totally fitting with this kind of tale. And it sets up an interesting story, a mystery here. Where there's a curse where immigrants are being attacked. So we see a Polish woman and a Muslim family and somebody else. They all get attacked by this curse that's infected London. That's an interesting story. And then at the end, Willowtree tells Constantine that he is the new, what is it, the mage of...
Mage Lord.
Mage Lord of all England?
Of all England, yes.
While they're having a drinking contest at the bar where Constantine's been hanging out.
I don't know that Tommy knew they were having a drinking contest.
No, he wasn't aware, and that's why he was winning. Also, Constantine made the mistake of thinking he could drink under the table someone much younger than him. Because I don't care how grizzled of an alcoholic you are, this other guy's got a younger constitution. I just thought this was funny and fun, and I've been really enjoying this series. The mysteries have been fun. There's a bit in the middle here where the art gets sort of painterly, which was nice. It was all in all, I thought, a really fun issue.
Yeah, it was great to look at, and I was laughing the entire time, except for the, you know, horrifying anti-immigrant parts.
Right. Not funny.
Not funny, but the rest of the book, hilarious. John's cabbie, what was his name, Chase, previously?
Chaz.
Has been replaced by this new guy who's mute, named Noah, also very hilarious.
Yeah.
That happened in the first arc, but he's, yeah, tagging along for part of this, driving John around.
Well, he's the new Chaz, but he met John in the first arc.
Yeah. I was just...
sorry, my brain is cooking in my head, so just keep talking.
Fine. And I'm still really enjoying the Scottish bouncer lady.
Mm-hmm.
She's hilarious. I think this happened in the last issue, or at least I noticed it in the last issue, and it continued on a little bit in this one. But John is apparently bi?
Yeah, he's always been bi, yeah.
Oh, I guess I didn't realize that. That's cool.
Yeah. On the TV show as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That is neat. But yeah, this was really super funny. I was really glad I got caught up on it in time to talk about it on the show.
There was a lot of really good books this week. I'm going to talk about them, and I had a really fun time reading comics. But every time I would think about it, and I finished reading them, and I gave myself a couple hours to think about it, my brain kept coming back to this book and scenes from the book, jokes from the book, and just thinking about the story and wanting to read more of it. That's generally the sign of a pick of the week. And also, we should mention that it looks like that... As we've seen throughout this series and also the Prelude one-shot that I think Josh made pick of the week, old Constantine from the previous continuity, it seems to be the overarching villain here.
Oh, interesting.
The old man in the flat cap who is...
It was revealed at the end of issue 3 and then we see briefly in this issue.
Yeah, that is old John from the old Vertigo series. And so that
interesting.
He seems to be the one that has enacted this curse that is infecting places in London where if you draw them on a map, turns out to be a giant penis.
So
John's battling himself, although he doesn't know it yet. So there's a lot of interesting things going on here. Cy Spurrier, I think, is doing a great job of setting things up. And Josh and I have talked before, in the past, not been huge fans of his, but this book has been firing on all cylinders. I would imagine, and I'm not an expert, but I would imagine that old-time Vertigo fans must be enjoying it.
Cy Spurrier has the right mix of supremely British...
Mm-hmm.
Just enough, like, of the profane, you know, shit monsters and swear words. And then, yeah, just some clever ideas that are clearly speaking to issues that are happening in our world.
Right.
That I think it all comes together really nicely for a book that is funny, relevant, and reads very authentic to at least my American perception of having watched a lot of BBC.
Yeah. I'm going to keep referring to Josh because he's the Hellblazer fan here. But he's always said that. As good as an American writer is, it's usually not as good as unless it's a British writer. It just feels different. I've only read some of the Azzarello stuff. I think I read one of those. He did like a one-shot hardcover a long time ago. I think I read that one when John was in prison. That sounds like it's right in my brain. Anyway, this has been great. And it's funny because now like I get excited when a Hellblazer book comes out. And that was something I didn't think would ever happen. When it comes out, it's been really good. And the art change has been great. Is it Tommy Willowtree? Tommy Willowtree.
Yeah, that sounds right.
He's appropriately hilarious as a millennial caricature, although not that caricatured from people I meet in Los Angeles all the time. Oh, he's also got double sleeves, tattoos. And also, we should mention a terrific Jean Paul Leon cover, which features Tommy Willitree in hovering meditation at the Tower of London. It was terrific. It was really terrific. This is a great jumping on point. You don't need to know about the previous arc, although you should. It was terrific, but this is a great issue to start reading if you're curious at all, if you're an old Hellblazer fan.
Yeah, the previous arc was a little tricky just because it reminded me a little bit of season one of The Wire, where like the dialogue is so affected by the accent and mm-hmm. the way that it's written that it can feel a little impenetrable. But I think if you just kind of let it wash over you, you can get through it and still get the sense of what the story is about. This issue felt much more approachable, and there are things that are set up in the first three issues, John's demon phone, for example, that I think will help flesh out the story but aren't 100% necessary.
You're right, this is slightly more new reader friendly, I think.
Yeah, sure thing, bruv.
So John Constantine Hellblazer number 4 is the first part of the scrubbing up story, and I'm looking forward to John and Tommy's adventures in saving England from this curse. This is a really great issue. But also another great comic this week was Batman Superman number 7 from Josh Williamson and taking over from Dave Marquez. And at first I saw Dave Marquez's name not on the book and I went, oh, and then I saw it was Nick Darrington and I went, ooh, Nick Darrington moving over from Batman Universe to draw this arc, I assume, of Batman Superman. Now we've moved beyond the Batman Who Laughs story, finally. That took 6 issues.
Yeah, that was what kind of lost me with this book, is I had very little patience for the Batman Who Laughs stuff. And so I stopped reading after, I think, 2 issues, and I wasn't able to catch back up in time for recording.
And I understand. Yeah, and you wouldn't need to have read the intervening issues. I mean, there's a brief mention here of the aftermath of that, but really this is its own story. In fact, it ties more into Bendis's run on Superman than anything else. So in Bendis's run, that ill-fated idea of Rogozar, the guy really responsible for the death of Krypton, he had destroyed Kandor in that arc. And here, Zod retrieves Kandor and then takes them to a Lazarus pit to be revived, all the people of Kandor. And that sets up a confrontation between him and Ra's al Ghul, who seeks out the help of Superman and Batman to stop Zod. It's his double team up, in a way. And all drawn by Nick Darrington, drawn terrifically. He was my artist of the year last year. You know, the Josh Williamson stuff, it's all over the place for me. This is not as sharp. I think of Nick Darrington, and I think of Bendis' writing, and that's incredibly sharp. And this is a little... Every once in a while, a character says something, and I wince a little bit. But the story was really fun, and then the cliffhanger was terrific, in which all of the tiny Kryptonians emerge from the Lazarus Pit. And so now you've got thousands of tiny, insane Kryptonians, because when you come out of the Lazarus Pit, you are insane. So that's going to be fun for the 4 of them to deal with. It's a fun little team-up story, and if you were turned off like Ryan from the first arc, you can jump right on here and not worry about it.
I will plan on doing that.
Trust me, I didn't enjoy the last arc. I only kept reading it for Dave Marquez's art, but even then it was tough sometimes. This was a really fun book. This was up there for Pick of the Week as well. And the third one was X-Men number 7, which was a little bit of a surprise for me. Jonathan Hickman and Lanil Francis Yu, Sonny Go, and Clayton Cowles. Have you been reading X-Men?
Yeah, oh boy, this issue. I have not been reading all of the spinoffs.
No. I just meant X-Men as a series, because Josh dropped off of it. I feel like every third issue has been incredible, which I realize there's only been 7 issues, but I feel like 3 of the 7 have been incredible issues, and then the rest have been okay.
And this is one of the ones you thought was incredible?
I thought this was incredible.
This is one of those where it's like an episode of the Simpsons back in the day, where it'll start off with what you think is an initial premise, and then it gets twisted and morphed so much that by the end of the episode you can't imagine that it started off the way that it did, because this starts off with Cyclops and Logan having coffee on the moon.
And flirting.
Yeah, okay, so is there like a... I know I was asking about Constantine's sexuality in our previous discussion, but like, I feel like I've seen Cyclops flirting both with Jean and Emma, and now Logan to a little
bit. Well,
as
we've discussed, Krakoa's nickname is Fuck Island, where everyone is just constantly having sex. So right? I think it's been highly implied. We saw the layout of their moon base, in which all of their bedrooms connected to each other's, that there's some sort of throuple action happening between Logan and Scott and Jean.
I think Emma's in there too, isn't she?
I think Emma's is a wild card, because she doesn't live on the moon base with them, I don't think.
But I feel like she's been flirting with both. She's been like, still calls Scott, you know, darling or whatever.
Well, Emma flirts with everybody, and here she is. This issue, or was the other one we're going to talk about, where she definitely
flirts? Which is the whole genie in a bikini, Scotty in a Speedo. I was like, man.
There was an issue this week where Emma definitely flirted with Scott. It's not this one, but it was one of the other X-Men books. But to me, when this gets interesting is when it really explores this strange new paradigm and all of the different...
Call it a cult yet?
We've been calling it a cult for weeks, Josh and I. It's definitely...
super culty.
It's definitely a cult. They're wearing flowers in their hair.
Now we're indoctrinating children.
The idea here, we've been investigating the idea that the X-Men can't die. And they've got backup copies on the island, and so if they die, the Five, or whatever the group name is, resurrects them from the last backup copy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we introduce the idea of, what about all the mutants that were deactivated during, was it House of X?
It was what precipitated House of M.
House of M, right, when Scarlet Witch said no more mutants. And so here we have some mutants, some of the Guthrie clan, who are on Krakoa, and in order to get revived as full mutants, which I would assume would mean to their original copy, which wouldn't be the person they are now. Anyway, they have to fight Apocalypse with a sword, and he has to kill them.
I think it's a thing where, like, the DNA that they're using to resurrect them, their body, is the mutant DNA with the X gene activated, but the memories are downloaded from the moments right before death.
Sure. The point is, they have to have a sword fight with Apocalypse so he can kill them.
Yeah. Real Mountain and the Viper vibes.
It was a brutal fight between her name and Apocalypse, in which they have a sword fight, and then she loses her sword, so then he just beats on her for a while, and she's got like a bloody and swollen and bruised up face. And
Arrow is her mutant name, and yeah, like you said, she's one of the Guthrie, Melody Guthrie.
Cannonball, her relative of some brother or something, doesn't like it. Obviously, he's got to be held back because Apocalypse is just beating on her. I mean, there's just one page where it's almost Joker and Jason Todd, like, where we see from her perspective, he's just punching down on her over and over.
It was super brutal.
And then she's resurrected and has to stand naked in front of the entire island of Krakoa.
Cult.
It's fucking weird, and I love it.
And Nightcrawler declares somewhat unceremoniously that all of the problems or questions that this new system proposes will necessitate the creation of a new mutant religion, and he's going to do it.
That's what I keep finding interesting, is they're peeling the layers of the onion away. And so now we have, okay, what about those other mutants? And now we have religion being brought into it. And anytime they really fully examine how strange this new society is, I think it's really interesting. The other issues in which they don't really do much, I think of the last issue, I thought was kind of boring, the one before that.
It was really kicked off with House of X and Powers of 10 that Jonathan Hickman was going to do X-Men as true sci-fi.
Right.
Like, he was going to take a science fiction concept, ask what if, and really follow, you know, go down the rabbit hole of like, well, if this was possible, then this could happen. But then if that happened, then this could happen. And it feels like links in a chain that all make sense, that are leading us. I don't know where the story is going, but the high concept of it is a really interesting series of thought experiments about a way a society would work if X, Y, and Z could all be simultaneously true.
Which makes sense for that first Nightcrawler want to start a religion, because they are this hermetically sealed society.
And it seems like Krakoa has already built a church on the island that no one has access to,
right,
except Nightcrawler. And I'm guessing once he develops his religion, that's got to be the sort of MacGuffin of, like, the church will open when the master is ready to appear.
They don't even consider themselves human. I mean, I know they've always been homo superior, but they've leaned into it that they're not human, that they're different than everyone else. And this is in a more militant, angry way. And there's a lot of talk about them being evil, and they kind of are.
One thing we didn't touch on is the reason that she has to fight Apocalypse is because if every mutant who had lost their powers during House of M killed themselves simultaneously, it would be too much for the island to resurrect, because it'd be like millions of people.
Right.
So they've developed this system called the Crucible, where to prove that you're worthy to be resurrected as your mutant self, you have to fight Apocalypse to the death.
Sure. Yeah.
Doesn't sound fun.
They're bad guys. And it's interesting to see them being explored that way.
Well, that transitions us nicely to X-Men Fantastic Four number 2, story by Chip Zdarsky, pencils by Terry Dodson, inks by Rachel Dodson with Carl Story and Ransom Getty, colors by Laura Martin, and letters by Joe Caramanga. Are you reading this?
Yes, and this is the book where Emma and Scott were flirting.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, this is also the book where it's like the X-Men's position seems completely unsupportable.
That's what I mean. They're full-on bad guys. Which is fine. It's a take. And, you know, have your take and do it. You know, for us, the hard part we've had is certain characters like Wolverine, we feel like shouldn't be on board with this weird sex cult in the Pacific or wherever the island is. But they're all in on this. And even to the point where, you know, they go up against Fantastic. They basically not kidnap the kids, but it seems like they've kidnapped Valeria and Franklin. And so the Fantastic Four invade the island and they fight. And Doom is sort of on their side, which should worry them, and it's all a big mess. But I thought this was a lot of fun, too, and the Terry Dodson art was great. We hardly ever see Terry Dodson interiors.
The scene that I really liked was when they're in their council room discussing, you know, Cyclops is trying to be like, so did we steal the kids? And everyone's being like, no, we legitimately didn't. He's like, okay, but Reed is saying we did. So they're going to come here and like mess us up and we got to figure this out. And somebody makes an offhand comment of like, yeah, it's weird that they're not already here. Like they should have been here by now, like just based on, you know, the Fantastic Four, whatever. And then like they realize that like, oh, they're in the room and they're invisible and they're going to beat the shit out of us.
Like, yeah, and it had sort of stakes because, you know, for up to this point, it's almost been the invincible X-Men because they show up in your country and they strong arm you into doing what they want or they destroy your troops or whatever. And here, they can't do that to the Fantastic Four. And so there's actual stakes to this fight. I love Invisible Thing, you know, showing up and just clocking Magneto. It was a great sequence.
It seems like Reed's plan should have been better. Then Sue will keep us invisible and use force fields to help us win this fight. And Cyclops knocked her out immediately. And then Reed's play was like, run!
For a genius, Reed isn't the greatest strategy.
No, he's a different kind of genius.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, Catherine Pride, or Kate, as we're now calling Kate, her. Kitty Pride and Franklin and Valeria are on Doom Island, which sounds like a terrible theme park.
Doom has his own island. Everyone gets an island in the Marvel Universe.
And he has an island to keep all of Latveria's mutant population out of Latveria, but not on Krakoa.
Which makes sense for Doom. That was totally in character for Doom.
And the inciting incident here is that Franklin's powers are diminishing. So like every time he uses his powers, they're not like coming back full strength. Mm-hmm. And Reed can't figure out a way to fix him. And Franklin rightly notes that, like, yeah, the two people who have powers who need to be tweaked, Reed can't seem to do it, him and Ben.
Right.
Franklin's got a lot of teenaged angst and thinks that his dad doesn't want him to be special.
So he goes to the cool, dangerous uncle for help.
Right. I kind of dig it.
Yeah, we talked about the first issue. Chip Zdarsky writes a great Fantastic Four. He wrote a great Marvel 2-in-1 miniseries with them before. He also writes a great X-Men. This is an interesting sort of side story to all the X-Men stuff going on with Latverian mutants and the Fantastic Four. You know, at first I was always weirded out that Franklin was a mutant, but then I realized, you know, the mutant gene can happen anywhere. So it's interesting to have the son of one of the more prominent heroes be a mutant as well and not have the father be one. So that causes tension, especially now with what they're doing with the X-Men. This story's fun. It doesn't really take place, you know, Kitty's alive and Pyro doesn't have his face tattoo, but it's a fun story. I've been enjoying it.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that, like, I imagine, I have to believe that when Chip's writing this, he's trying to write a story that's balanced in a way where you could argue either the X-Men perspective or the Fantastic Four perspective, but everything I've seen online and everything I feel while reading it just makes it seem like the X-Men are completely unsupportable.
No one can support the X-Men.
Okay.
Please contact us at contact@fanboy.com if you think you can support the X-Men's position. We will debate that on the show if you think you can.
I'll debate it on Twitter. I'm not afraid.
Not just in time for the show, because the show's not launching until much later, but to coincide with the show, because that's all the books do now, is Falcon and the Winter Soldier number one. From a creative team I'm not familiar with, written by Derek Landry, pencils by Federico Vincenti. I know Matt Mila as colors, and I know Joe Caramagna on letters, but I don't know this writer-artist team. However, I thought this was solidly done. It wasn't great. It didn't blow my socks off. It wasn't as good as some of the other team-up books that we've seen recently with Winter Soldier and Hawkeye and Black Widow. I thought this was well done. I thought the characterizations were pretty good, and I thought the villain was interesting.
I agree with everything you said. Falcon's costume's still terrible.
Yeah. Well, it's fine because they don't wear their costumes almost the entire issue, so whatever.
Red Wing's got this, like, hood harness. Like, Red Wing has a secret identity now, too, I think.
Well, you don't want to confuse him for other birds. He's got his own issues. He's got a family. He's got a job. He doesn't want anyone to know
he's a superhero. It feels like they're really trying to be like, okay, well, in the movie and subsequent TV show, Red Wing is a drone, so we better put some robotics on this bird.
He might have been feeling inadequate next to Falcon's giant shoulder pads. Much like the TV show, I assume the characters spend all but 6 pages in regular clothes, so I assume that's how the show will go as well. So here they encounter a child killer who is faster and stronger and better at fighting than they are.
The Natural.
He's a young Robert Redford.
And all the lights explode and he...
So I forget why this even happened. I forgot. I mean, I like the issue, but I'm having trouble remembering what happened in it. Maybe it's because I've been frying an egg on top of my head for the last
time. I will tell you what happened. What happened is...
Oh, all the dead people. That's right.
Bucky gets attacked in his home. He gets out of his home. It turns out there's this Office of Federal Utilities, which sounds very boring, but turns out it's a secret organization that tracks down domestic terrorist training camps and then sends Bucky to kill them all.
That's right.
Everyone in the office has been assassinated except for one woman who didn't come in because she had a hangover.
Good for her.
And so they go track this woman down to see if she can help them figure out what's going on. And while they are dealing with this hungover woman, this child comes and beats the snot out of them and then leaves them not for dead purposefully and says, come get me if you can. Next time, I'm going to kill you.
I mean, the kid is not the most original character type. The idea of, you know, I'm a huge fan of yours and I'm going to tell you how much of a fan I am while I'm beating you up. I feel like I've seen that kind of character before, but it was entertainingly done. And I thought that the art was appropriately exciting and kinetic in the fight scene, which was a long fight scene between the three of them.
Yeah, it sort of had like Luther Strode vibes.
Yeah. And so it'll be interesting to see how they beat this young Robert Redford in a wearing Joker colors. He's wearing purple and green.
It's going to be hard because when you're wearing shoulder pads that big, you really don't have the range.
That's why he never wears the costume anymore.
Because, you know, the shoulder pads are going to keep hitting you in the ear if you raise your arm up too high. And it's just tough. It's tough to fight that way.
There's no range of motion in that costume.
Yeah.
So this was interesting. I didn't love it as much as I was hoping. It wasn't in the contention for Pick of the Week like I thought it might be. But I did really enjoy reading it. And I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. Let's take a quick break and talk about how you, the listener, can support iFanboy. We are listener supported, and we thank everyone who does. That's how the show keeps going, keeps the lights on, keeps paying for equipment, and Josh has got a whole new microphone set up thanks to the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. Our next stretch goal is we'll do a monthly non-comics media podcast, and we'll upload all the missing full-length video shows and minis to our YouTube channel. Re-embed them on the website. Most of them are missing. You can't see them. You can't find them. So we'll if we hit the next stretch goal, which is only $300 away, we'll hit that goal. So only a small portion of you need to become patrons. And we thank anyone who does. T-shirt store, fanboy.threadless.com. We can find our 7 t-shirt designs all there. And we just set up a new Slack channel to discuss our new t-shirt designs to get the production going. So we're going to finalize those designs. We got a designer we use. And we'll finish those and we'll get them out to you as soon as possible. fanboy.threadless.com. Also fanboy.com/support. That's where you can directly donate via PayPal if you're just wanting to throw a couple bucks in like a tip jar, or if you are a wily old billionaire who needs to get rid of some money before the federal investigators find out what you've got. You can do that at fanboy.com/support. And finally, fanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find a link to buy our Booksplode books and a general link. And we thank everyone who does that. We really do keep the show going because of you, and we appreciate it. And I'm sitting here covered in sweat.
Sounds like you could use an absorbent 100% cotton t-shirt.
I could.
It's a real shame you don't get them for free. But
it's not natural. Amethyst number. I almost said amethyst. I don't know why I did that. But again, I can barely remember my own name right now. Amethyst number 1 from Wonder Comics, DC's Bendis line of books, or at least Bendis adjacent books.
Amethyst would be some sort of religion.
Amethyism. That's maybe what they'll do on Krakoa. So I wasn't going to read this book because Amethyst is all right. I've never really responded to the character when she had a new 52 book. It wasn't the best. And I've enjoyed her as a part of Young Justice, but I don't know if I was going to read her as a solo character, but I saw Amy Reeder was doing it and she's a terrific writer artist. So I gave it a shot and it was fine.
Where does the whole Gem World thing come from? This is a gap in my comics knowledge history.
I think it's an old 80s concept, but I could be wrong. It's one of those things there that wouldn't have appealed to 13-year-old Connor. So I didn't really pay much attention to it when I was younger.
Until you got converted to amethyism.
Right. Right, obviously. The thing about amethyism is it's all about sex and thrupling. I don't even know what that
means. Sure. Well, and recrystallization, of course.
Right. It's all through crystals. We put crystals on our bodies and heads, and then we drink from the Krakoa bean. So, amethyst. Amethyst goes back to her gym world because there's a big ceremony, and she finds that basically her whole kingdom has been destroyed. In Gem World, all the kingdoms, there's an Opal Kingdom and a Amethyst Kingdom, and all the different gems have their own kingdoms, and hers has been destroyed, the Turquoise Kingdom. So she's trying to figure out what's going on. She goes to her allies, the House of Turquoise, and they don't want to help her, even though her best friend is in charge, and everyone there has four arms, which is weird, because they're not full arms. They break off at the elbow, which has just kept freaking me out every time I looked at it. So she thinks that the House of Opal, which is their natural enemy, is the cause of all these problems, but she doesn't quite know for sure. She's just running around trying to find help and figure out what's going on.
I don't think Opal is a true gemstone, so this might be like a racist thing.
I think it's that in the 80s or whenever this started, they didn't do a lot of research. They just said, this sounds good, and moved on.
You know, it's an hydrated amorphous silicate, and so it's more of a stone than a gem.
Is turquoise a gem?
Yeah, because it has a crystal habit. But opal is an unorganized form of hydrated silica.
So if someone gives you an opal ring or pendant, you should throw it back in their face?
I think opal's beautiful.
I think so as well.
It's just, you can't cut it like you can cut a diamond or an emerald or a sapphire.
What do you do with it?
You polish it into a smooth. That's why it's always like a polished ovoid shape. Because the way the light refracts through it, it is random as opposed to a crystal, which is structured.
Well, you know, it makes sense that they'd be the bad guys because they feel inadequate. They are not actually gems.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Seems racist. Don't know how, but.
Amethyst began in 1983. Which I knew it was in the 80s. I could remember seeing ads for it in the books, but not on my radar.
Because non-hydrated silica would just be quartz.
Okay. I've lost thread on that. Anyway, I liked it.
Yeah, I liked some aspects of it. I really liked the markings on the giant caterpillar that made it seem more dangerous than it really was.
Yeah.
I thought that was really fun and cute.
I think she's a great artist, and I think she's a strong writer. And I think as long as she is doing the writing, the art on it, I'll probably keep reading it.
The Wonder Comics are supposed to be all ages, right?
I don't know. They've never really said, or at least I've...
YA.
But they're not far.
Which is not a bad thing, but
no.
Not always the stories I gravitate to at this point in my life.
Sure. I understand. I mean, there's an ad in the back for Batman Damned. So, you know, bat penis in that one.
Yeah, no, I think as a teenager, I would have been much more into both Batman Damned and Amethyst.
So, Leviathan Dawn, number one, Bendis and Maliv. Did you read Leviathan? I keep wanting to say Leviathan Down, but that was Vader Down.
I'm all caught up on both Leviathan and Vader Down.
Event Leviathan was the first one. This is the sequel in which David Bowie breaks out Steve Trevor from prison, and then they form sort of an anti... Event Leviathan was all about a bunch of investigator characters forming together to figure out who Leviathan is. In this issue, David Bowie and Steve Trevor form some sort of anti-investigator hero group for other reasons. And Green Arrow's on both. I don't know what was going on in this book.
Mr. Bones!
That was a funny bit.
I had a Mr. Bones growing up.
They were forming Checkmate. And so this is the new Checkmate, which is Steve Trevor, Kate Spencer, Green Arrow, Lois Lane, Talia al Ghul, Question, and Mr. Bones. And then the King, who looks exactly like David Bowie.
I loved the guard at the Iron Heights prison talking about Talia. And I was like, she's just so mean.
I mean, it's funny. It's in the Bendis way, this was entertaining. But it didn't grab me like Event Leviathan did. And I wasn't quite sure. I feel like we were on a really steady trajectory with Event Leviathan and the beginnings of Action Comics, Superman. And I feel like all these stories sort of hit a wall at the same time. And now it's all a mess.
Yeah, I mean, Leviathan seems to be setting up his own country, so he's taken over Markovia, which is the country where the Geoforce character is from.
And Terra,
his little sister. Yeah, I guess when Event Leviathan ended, I thought it was done for a while. I wasn't expecting a new Leviathan story to come out this quickly, and so I didn't go into it with any sort of like idea of what it was going to be about, and so I was kind of just like, okay,
well if you there recall, there was a road to Leviathan. Right? That one shot, that's what that was called. And then this is also, I guess, a one shot because it says continued in Event Leviathan Checkmate. So.
I mean, there was a time where I really liked Checkmate. You know, that Greg Rucka, was Judd Winnick involved in that era as well?
Not in that book. That was Eric Trautman.
That's right. Yep. I really liked that series. So I'm not against Checkmate coming back.
I just don't feel the connection to this one I felt to the first one. I'm not saying I won't. I'm willing to feel it again. I'm just looking forward to feeling that way because I don't right now.
Thank you for telling me that, Connor. This feels like relationship counseling. You're telling me a lot about...
What is this show but not counseling through our comic book relationship every week? Action Comics 1020, this is sort of emblematic of the problems in that we had interesting stories going on with Bendis' book, and now we're smack dab in the middle of this Justice League... death metal story infects into it, and now I feel like I read this issue and I don't know what the hell happened in it. I mean, I know what happened in it. It was a giant fight scene, but I don't know why any of it happened.
I feel like Brian Michael Bendis is smart enough to know that having John Romita Jr. draw the new Young Justice was not a good idea. And I'm not sure how he let it happen anyway. You know, since the days where he was on Avengers and Spider-Woman had hair,
yeah.
I love John Romita Jr., but he's one of those people who all of his characters look like they're from a certain era.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, there's an ad in here for Superman Year One, which featured terrific John Romita Jr. art, as far as I was concerned, but I thought this was really rocky. Putting a pin in the art for a second, you know, Young Justice shows up at the Hall of Justice, and Superman arrives, and he's like, oh, we don't have time to talk, I gotta do this thing, there's a fight going on in the park with Lex Luthor and the Legion of Doom, and then he talks to Tim Drake, he's like, oh, who are you? He's like, I'm Robin. In this reality, he's never been Robin, he was Red Robin, and they made a whole point of him, I was never Robin, I was only Red Robin. But he calls himself Robin, even though in the page previously his Drake name is on the page. And then Superman acts like he's never met him before. Robin has to say, we worked together during Final Crisis. And he's like, oh, right. Does he not know who Tim Drake is?
It seems like no one at DC knows who Tim Drake is.
I mean, I realize this is a Superman from another multiverse, but you're telling me that he doesn't know who Tim Drake is?
Feels like that aspect of his character has also been forgotten. I have a question, not reading Justice League. Lex Luthor's a Martian now?
I don't even have the time or the will to explain that to you.
Well, then you're going to have to turn your Green Lantern ring back into the core.
I can't do it. I can't do it. It hurts me.
Is Connor a quarter Martian then? Because that was a thought I had. Maybe Connor should have some Martian power.
He was given power by Perpetua, the mother of the Monitor and the Anti-Monitor. And then we all thought that story ended, but it keeps going here.
Okay.
And as cool as it was to see Superman and Connor Kent flying off into battle together because they don't know each other here, again, it's like, what is going on?
I do not know.
So it was a weird issue.
If you brought me here today to tell you what's going on, I cannot do that for you.
I was hoping someone somewhere, anywhere could tell me. And there was one point, and you're reading this digitally, right? On page 16... where Batman's talking to Superman and Diana through the comms. What is he wearing?
Oh yeah, because his mouth is all weird. But he looks like
Ronin.
Yep, I think yeah.
And then later on, he's in a giant bat armor thing that was very reminiscent of Batman Year One. But like, what is the other outfit?
I think that's supposed to represent that he's already in the armor or putting on the armor. I was confused at first too, but that was how I interpreted it.
I don't know what's happening. This was crazy. And not in a fun way. Not in like, that was crazy. Like, that was like, what is it?
Because it looks like his mask is like floating in front of his face. But he's also still wearing a mask.
To many people's chagrin or amusement, Josh and I have been giant boosters of Bendis's run. And I don't know what's happening right now.
Yeah. Feels like there's some storytelling issues. Feels like there's some editorial crossover
issues.
Yeah, editorial issues. There's issues. And this was an issue. This was issue 1020. Issues.
Yeah.
Dialing back the clock by roughly 1,019 issues is tomorrow number one.
So this is Dark Horse. It's a burger book. And it's Pete Milligan and Jesus Hervas and James Hervé.
And letters by Sal Cipriano. I try to be good about picking up number ones just to check them out. There's a lot.
You're always good about bringing Dark Horse number ones onto the show. Some of them have been great. Like, I've been enjoying reading the ones, the Civil War one. No, that was Jane. That was John. That was that was either one of those. That was Jim. Holy cow. I'm literally sitting in a pool of sweat, and I can't remember anyone's name. That was Jim. But you brought on another book that I'm still reading. I can't remember what it was at the moment. It's not important.
Okay. This one, I started flipping through it digitally, and the first page is a page-long intro by Peter Milligan, and I was like, oh no, I don't want that as the start of the book. But it turns out it's a book all about young people surviving a pandemic. And I don't know if you're looking at the same coronavirus map I am looking at.
I am, because you sent it to me and I can't stop.
Did you read it?
Yeah, after you said you wanted to put it on the show, I read it. This was a mess. This was a giant mess.
Oh, really? I kind of dug it.
I had real problems with the storytelling. So the big pitch is that it's basically Why the Last Man, but with all the adults dying instead of all the men dying. That's like the sort of the high-level pitch, which is kind of surprising since it's Karen Berger, who also was the editor on that book. The opening essay didn't help, I think. I don't think you should explain the book before it starts. I think the essay should come at the back, as is very typical, and then talk about the book if you want. But I don't think you should start off the book this way. It was the same problem with Butcher of Paris starting off telling us everything about the killer in the first on the inside flap of the book instead of the actual story.
Yeah.
And so here it just felt like a bunch of random things that happened. I know that's sort of the nature of the story, which introducing a bunch of characters. However, it felt sloppy. For instance, one of the main characters is this cellist.
Oscar
is neuroatypical. He's from San Diego, and he's in New York auditioning for some prestigious music college. But we flash back to San Diego, where he's freaking out because his twin sister is not coming with him on the trip, and he's never traveled without her. And so his mother's soothing him, and he says, you have to wear yellow. You know you always wear yellow. And she says, I wear red when we travel. I wear yellow when you're playing. Four panels later, they're flying, and she's wearing yellow, not red, which is what she said she was going to be wearing four panels earlier.
Well, because he said, I'm playing right now because I'm playing it in my head, I think is what they were going for there. I actually kind of liked this.
But let's just a couple more things. So then, and then you can explain why you liked it, because I'm very curious. So then there's like super stereotypical rich kid soccer team whose bus crashes because the bus driver dies. And
that part I hated.
That part was
bus should have just exploded.
And then there's the rich kid's dad who's off on an executive retreat in the fucking desert with his team, and someone starts shooting at them. But then there's this guy who's a cybersecurity expert who we meet earlier with his family, and he's briefing the Joint Chiefs of Staff or a bunch of generals. And he's briefing them on this virus, which apparently jumped from computers to people, which, again, I don't think is possible, but whatever. He gets a phone call in the middle of his briefing, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he takes it, which would never happen. And the guy on the phone says, hey, I'm Yashin Pogrov, the famous Russian hacker. And he goes, Yashin Pogrov? Just believes him. Just decides to believe him. This could be anybody. And then Russian forces break in the middle of a call and kidnap this guy, but he's like, we gotta go save Yashin Pogrov. And literally, again, could have been anybody calling him on the phone. And also, he takes another call while the generals are like, we need to finish this briefing, from his family who have had a bad accident. I mean, it just seemed like a bunch of things that wouldn't happen. Bad storytelling, and I don't know. I mean, the idea is kind of interesting, where, you know, the idea he talks about in the essay again is like, everyone talks about the future, the hope of the future is in the children, but the children are just as awful as adults are. So what's going to happen when the children are in charge? We've all read Lord of the Flies. And so I don't know. I didn't like it, but I'm curious to see why you did.
So I thought it was interesting to have neuroatypical person as one of the primary protagonists.
Mm-hmm.
The way that it was written at first, I agree with you. I don't like the essay in the front, but I think if I hadn't read that essay, that character might not have worked at all for me. But the idea that, like, I'm not responding to the panic from this pandemic the same way as everybody else because of this thing,
right,
I thought was actually kind of interesting and something I hadn't seen before.
That was interesting, yes.
I actually kind of liked the virus jumping from computers to humans. That, to me, felt like a very Warren Ellis. Remember Global Frequency?
I did, but I never read it.
Okay. It was an anthology series, and it had a storyline that was similar, where there was like a you know, data-driven virus sort of thing. And I actually think that's kind of cool. I think that's worth exploring. It seems like, you know, it's an issue one.
I'll also just say they just did this on Deceased, where if you look at the screen and you get the virus, that was just the main plot point of Deceased. But
that's true. But those are superheroes, and these are just people.
I'm just saying this felt very derivative of a bunch of different things. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe just because I've been thinking about coronavirus more than I should.
Sure.
You know, the idea of a virus spreading faster than we can control it, and a certain group of people maybe having some degree of immunity or some ability to handle it, I found interesting enough that I enjoyed this and will probably read the next issue.
Oh, the irony of a disease that attacks through screens and yet none of the children get it.
You sound okay, boomer. You sound real old, but you say stuff like that.
I just didn't like it, but that's fine. I thought the art was good. It didn't work.
I didn't love it. I just thought it was worth talking about. Sure. For a few minutes.
Are you going to stay with it? It's a 5-issue miniseries.
Yeah. I'll read issue two, and if I don't like issue two, then I'll drop it because I have no loyalty.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about. It was a pretty big week, and on patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. All the patrons can do that, and the runaway winner was Fantastic Four Grim Noir number 1 from Jerry Duggan, Ron Garney, Matt Milla, and Joe Caramagna again. And this was also the running for Pick of the Week.
Really?
This might have been number 2, actually.
Interesting.
This was terrific. This is a one-shot tale featuring the Thing, who is being menaced in his dreams by a creature. And
I was just confused because I thought we were going back to like the Marvel Noir universe at first.
No, I think this is just the one shot.
No, it is. It's clearly set in the current Fantastic Four continuity. I just wish that had been more clear.
Right.
Also, Grim Noir is a great wordplay.
It's great. And so there's this, I don't say creature, but there's this villain.
Being.
Demon-y being that is preying on Ben Grimm's pain and angst and threatens Alicia. And it's just, I thought this was a really interesting and great look at the thing. The dream imagery was interesting. Mm-hmm. A nice history of him. Even though it's modern day, apparently when he was a kid, it was the 1920s. And
yeah, I noticed that, and I actually really enjoyed that.
I love that about comics.
I didn't mind that at all.
I love that.
It's a lot of
flat caps and t-shirts and suspenders.
Yep. A lot of Tom Cater's vested DC gangsta. What did Tom Cater's always call them? Like the hoodlums?
Street toughs,
that's right. Always wearing vests in the DC universe.
The Ron Garnier was incredibly good. I was expecting and hoping, I mentioned this on Instagram, that it was going to be black and white like the cover.
Yeah.
But it was only that one sequence when he wakes up from his nightmare. But it still was great. I loved how prominent, and I'm going to give credit here to Matt Miller, how prominent the Thing's blue eyes were.
Mm.
I feel like they aren't usually this prominent. You know, because he's the ever-loving blue-eyed Thing, but he's got like Paul Newman-esque blue eyes all throughout this issue. And they really popped, and I loved that.
I agree with you about wishing it had been black and white, but by and large, I did really enjoy it. I really liked he wakes up from the nightmare and Alicia wakes up next to him and she makes some joke about going back to sleep. But then she's like, nah, forget it. I'm going to carve. Like, I'll go ahead and sculpt whatever this monster is that's chasing you so you can have a bust of it to go show
right.
me. I was like, that's really cool. That's like, it's sweet that she
And he runs in holding it like a club. He's like, Reed, who is this? I thought this was incredibly good.
And then it ends with one of the gone but not forgotten iFanboy barbecue specials or grilling out specials.
Right. I mean, look, the villain's called Despair.
Yeah, that was dumb.
DSPAYRE. This is like so comic booky that I was fine with it.
If you were at a cookout with the Fantastic Four, would you be annoyed that Johnny was cooking the hot dogs with his hands instead of just using the grill?
Yes.
Like, do you want to eat his metabolic product or do you just want to turn the grill on?
I thought about that as I was looking at that page. Like, he is cooking it badly. And I don't want to say wrong, because there's no such thing as wrong, but there's no way those hot dogs are going to be as good.
No. And, like, you got to imagine, like, did Johnny wash his hands before he started doing this? No, probably not. So, like, his hands are probably gross. He's putting all that grossness on your hot dog.
If he's going to be zapping the food, why even have the grill?
Right? Exactly. Exactly. Just shove your finger inside the hot dog, Johnny, and light up and cook it from the inside out like a microwave.
Also, he's got like a weird hairstyle going on. It's almost like a faux hawk.
Yeah, I see that.
But anyway, this was terrific. In a week without Hellblazer, this might have been the pick. It just was it was incredibly strong, very traditionally Marvel book. The great history, flashbacks to Ben's childhood, you know, his angst about being the Thing. It's all your classic Thing elements in this. And I really like the Ron Garnier, man. I don't know why he's not a regular artist. And I thought the little bit about their neighbor was great, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Rosemary, their singer.
Very very Rear Window.
Yes, their singer neighbor who gets abducted by the Despair. I used to have a neighbor that played a really beautiful violin in the afternoons. And I miss whoever that was because they've been gone for years. But it was like every day in the afternoon, this sort of beautifully mournful tune would play throughout the street. And it was just great.
I used to have neighbors who were a mariachi band. Ooh. And they would only practice on the weekends, though, because every weekend morning I would wake up to mariachi music, presumably for whatever quinceañera they were getting ready to go perform at. But it was lovely because like it never disrupted my sleep during the week. But on the weekends, I had this little treat of like,
I love mariachi. My mariachi is, I'm very pro. Anyway, what are we talking about? I don't know.
Ratings.
Patreon ratings. Oh, right.
Ratings.
I'm giving it a 5 out of 5.
4.5 out of 5.
I would stick with it if there were more, but there are none.
I would also stick with it if it were.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go vote to add a book to the rundown. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show. And we're going to start by thanking Tommy Newton. And Tommy Newton, he knows what will be a waste of his time.
Whoa.
Here's a scenario. You're home. You're comfortable. You've got a cocktail. You're watching a movie you like. You get your shoes off. And your friends call. They're like, hey, we're all at the bar doing this thing with these people. Tommy knows if going to the bar is a waste of his time or not.
Mm.
He knows, no, it'll be great. Go to the bar. Or he knows, no, it's going to be lame. You're going to spend a lot of money and not have a good time. You're very happy right now. Tommy knows instinctively when given a choice between activities, he knows what will be a waste of his time and what won't be a waste of his time.
I feel like 99.9%+ of the time, just staying home is going to be the right answer.
As you get older, absolutely. I'm just, you know, in my 20s, Tommy's power would have been very helpful.
You could have sorted through some things.
Just, you know, sometimes you're like, I spent an hour to get here for this. That's all.
So in the past couple of times I've been on, I've struggled because I haven't come up with patron powers ahead of time.
Sure.
So this time I really thought about it. I woke up in the night, I had an idea and thought, I'll remember that in the morning.
Didn't. You had a bad dream, like the thing?
Right. But I did the classic, like, I'll remember that in the morning. I don't need to write it down right now, which is wrong. I forgot it. But I think I need to take a page out of the Ron Richards playbook of patron powers and come up with the name of the hero.
Sure.
And then assign the power based on the name. So Michael Escobedo is his superhero name is Ketchup.
Okay.
Because once a day he can pause time for an hour to get caught up on something. It has to be used to get caught up on something.
Like paperwork or cleaning or.
Yep. And then they can only use the power again after a long or short rest.
Long or short rest.
It's a D&D thing.
Okay.
Yeah. There's two different kinds of rest in the D&D universe. So he has catch up and theoretically like anything that he's behind on. So if he's behind on sleep, he could use that hour to take a nap.
Interesting. But only to catch up on things. He can't like go travel somewhere. He can't use it to travel or whatever.
Or like sometimes like I'll have a recipe that I'm excited to make and it's like a project recipe. So I know it's going to take like longer than it should because it's a little bit more complicated. I couldn't use the power on that.
You can't use it to prep?
No, I couldn't mise en place with ketchup's powers.
Slicing onions?
You have to do it on something that is giving you anxiety because you're behind on it. It's linked to the anxiety.
So it's mostly a cleaning power.
Cleaning, paperwork, emails. You could use it to catch up on emails.
Sure.
If you're behind. So anything you need to catch up on, you could use this power 1 hour a day to do that.
Okay, so this next one, I swear this is a coincidence from what we talked about earlier. David Caswell can help his favorite baseball player hit a home run by turning into Glenn Close from The Natural.
Do the lights explode, though?
He has to be at the game.
Oh, interesting.
And he has to stand up, and then he turns into Glenn Close, and people start shouting for him to sit down, and the sun gets weird, and then his favorite player will hit a home run.
Interesting.
And then he's got the hat, the dress.
Can he get sponsorship for this? Like, could the Tampa Bay Rays?
Well, that's
like,
the thing is, it's so mysterious that no one really knows what happened.
I feel like he could market this, though.
So, but afterwards, they're like, wait, did that happen? And people are like, no, that couldn't have happened.
So he has trouble proving causation.
Right.
Okay, interesting. That's tough.
Yeah.
I feel like if you were a baseball fan.
And only once a game.
What is
so
it?
So it's not like every time the player comes up.
Does he have to activate it or does it just
pass? Oh, yeah, no, he has to consciously stand and turn into Glenn Close.
Okay. All right. JJ Orta. So I didn't tell you this before, but turns out. My powers this week, they're a duo. They're a team up.
Oh.
Because JJ Orta is Mustard Man.
Okay.
He has all the powers of mustard.
What does that mean? He adds a little spice, makes things. Is it a tang?
He can. He also, mustard seeds, famously from the Bible, one of the smallest seeds, but can grow into a large plant. So he can go from the size of a mustard seed up to about 10 feet tall. He can shoot mustard gas out of his hands.
He has all the powers of mustard.
He could dispense different kinds of mustards from his fingers. If you need your hot dog give a little zest, a little zing, a little zing zang.
Oh boy.
He can, anything mustard can do. He could stain something. If you need like a mustard stain on something, he can provide that stain. He can form the thiocyanates that give mustard its characteristic spice.
Well.
Yeah. Anything mustard can do, JJ Orta can also do that.
Well, there you go. JJ, David, Michael, and Tommy, thanks for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy. And we're reaching the end of our list of current patrons. And they will be going back in the list and getting everyone who had upgraded and hasn't yet received their power after becoming a patron. So we have that list. You are not forgotten. And you'll get
ketchup and mustard, man. I'm going to do this. Team-based, thought-ahead powers.
Let's do one quick email. I don't think it'll take that long. Dallas T. writes and says, I'm currently facing the dilemma that I'm sure you have at some point between my desire to save money on comics and have them at my fingertips at all times via Comixology Unlimited and my love of owning and reading from physical books. It's clear to me my personal preference is to have a physical book, but I've been using my free month's trial of Comixology and the sheer volume of what I've been able to read for free in a month is staggering, and the idea of reading things like Tom Taylor's entire all-new Wolverine run for free in Comixology instead of spending $70+ to track it all down in physical volumes has been amazing. I would also much rather support my local comic book store owner, who I have become good friends with, than Amazon with my money, but I'm in college and saving $10 every week on comics would be huge. Basically, I just want you to make my decision for me, or at least make arguments for why you like the format you do.
Oh, man. Great question. I am all digital, except for graphic novels at this point. And part of that is because, you know, also in college, I bought a lot of comics and I've been lugging them around behind me ever since. And it's reached a point where
it's a dead horse.
Yeah, it's more of a pain than not. So 10 years from now, I think you might appreciate having a hard drive full of great books you're excited to read than boxes upon boxes that you physically have to move around yourself. But the idea of supporting a local comic shop is something I definitely understand and think is a valid concern.
I think that's totally valid. I do think that at a certain point, though, if you are in college,
yeah,
and you're not a working professional with income, then I think you shouldn't feel beholden to anyone. Not that Dallas thing is beholden, but I think if you're a student and you're on limited income, then you should take the best deal you can get, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I shopped at a comic store all through college. We had one in downtown Ithaca, and luckily we did. I don't know what I would have done if we hadn't had one. I also definitely wouldn't have met Josh and Ron. I had a job and spent, that's how I paid for comics in college. But if there had been a cheaper option, if there had been a Comixology back then I might not have done that to save money. Because I had a campus job. It wasn't like I was making salary or anything. I'm like you. I'm a digital weekly reader. It's the best format for me. And then things I really like, I buy and trade. Like I'll definitely be having Superman Smashes the Clan on my shelf. But most of these comics that I read, most of anything, most TV shows, most movies, aren't things I'm going to want to have forever on my shelf. Do you know what I mean? Like, 70% or 80% of everything is sort of just mediocre. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but like it's disposable entertainment. And so, you know, there's TV shows I enjoy watching. I'm not going to buy them on Blu-ray or probably ever watch them again. But I enjoy them in the moment. Most movies I watch, I'm not going to watch again, but I enjoy them in the moment. And most comics I read every week, I enjoy in the moment, but I'm not going to buy the trade of. I was just keeping them out of inertia. You know, I had all those boxes. I had those 30 boxes that I ended up giving away. Because I had those books, it was something I'd always done, and I always kept doing it. And eventually, I was like, why am I doing this? Why am I keeping these? I'm never reading them. I don't look at them. I'd rather have, you know, all on my iPad, and then I'd rather have the extra space in my apartment, and then I'd rather have the books I really love, the ones worth reading again on my shelf in trade form. And that, to me, is the ideal way to trade collect comics, but there's different ways everyone, you know, does it.
And also, like, I have a partner who would not appreciate my entire comic collection on the bookshelves in our apartment. She really likes comics. She reads a lot of comics. Certain week to week, she probably reads more comics than I do. But
we should get her on the show next time.
She'd love it. Let's do it. I love this idea. So I agree. There's a point of diminishing returns, especially years out. I guess okay. So Red Sun is coming out as an animated movie soon.
Yep.
I would like to read Red Sun again. And and Julie, my wife, has never read it, which she pointed out to me when I was like, oh, one of my favorite series that I've been advocating to come out for years is coming out. And she's like, oh, well, I've never actually read it. And I was like, oh. And then I realized, like, I have no idea where my owned copy of the graphic novel is because it's in some box somewhere in the basement.
Right.
And where is my time better spent? Like, I need Tommy's power to tell me, is it a waste of time for me to go find it in the boxes or just download a digital copy and let her borrow my iPad for an hour?
Right. Yeah, I mean, the convenience level for the digital comic is second to none, I think, because a lot of it is digitized. It's easy to get if you want that book. Like, for instance, on the show, we'll be talking. Josh will be, or you or whoever will be extolling the virtues of a book. And I think, oh, I should read that. And I can just download it while we're talking. And so that's very helpful to me as a reader. But again, I don't denigrate anyone who has a giant collection. If I had a giant house, it might be a different story.
Here's what I'll say. I think for week-to-week issues, there's almost no reason I can think of to still be buying the paper copies. I think digital for the week-to-week single issues is clearly superior for me and my lifestyle and where I'm at and just everything about it. Mm-hmm. For collected editions, for graphic novels, I love going to the comic shop and supporting the comic shop in that way. And then the other thing, and I think Josh has talked about this before, I think at one point it was possible for comic shops to set up a Comixology or Amazon affiliate account.
Yeah, they used to have that. I don't think they do anymore, but I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't think it exists anymore, though.
If you're the kind of person who's bold enough to ask your comic shop, hey, is there a way I can buy digital comics through like a portal that you guys have? There might not be anymore, but we talked about working in college. I worked at the comic shop, so that was one of the jobs I had in college. I had a number of jobs, and here's a life hack: if you work in the comic shop in college, you get to read the comics Tuesday night. Just tell you that for free. Don't even have to buy them. Just while you're unloading the boxes.
So my summary here is, if you're in college, the money's tight, don't feel bad about using Comixology Unlimited. You know, if you want to support your comic store, you can support them after you graduate and get a job. And if you decide what's best for you, if you want to read them physically, then you should get them physically. But the benefits, the wide catalog is the space issues, those are hard to beat in terms of digital. I can't make your decision for you, Dallas, but I that's all I can tell you. That's all I can do for you.
It's difficult to have ethical consumption under capitalism, and I'm sorry for that, but we're all facing it.
And times are tough. You should do what's best for you.
Yeah.
Economically and ethically and all those things. And it's going to be different for everybody. Let's wrap it up. Contact@ifanboy.com is how you can write us in like Dallas. Thanks for doing that. We got a bunch of good emails in the last couple of weeks, but we have been running short on time, so we're going to make sure we get back to answering emails. Let's talk about other shows we do besides this one. So Josh's Talk Slow with Matthew Rosenberg is behind the feed on back there. There's his interview show that he does with a creator every other month. His next episode is supposed to be coming out this month, but he just told me today that they just ran into some scheduling conflicts. So that may not be coming out this month, but it may also be coming out this month. I just don't know for sure yet. Either way.
Is that why you missed the show today?
Yeah, he's out. He's out looking for this person.
Tracking down leads?
Yeah. So then Booksplode is the companion show where Josh and I or whoever review a single collected edition. We talked about Batman by Neil Adams, book 3. That's also back here in the feed. That was a lot of fun, that show. Went down a lot of interesting avenues. And so you can find those shows on our feed, those shows that are unlocked by the patrons. And also, coming soon with Ryan and I and Paul Montgomery is the Animation Brain Trust review of Superman Red Sun, which I just sent out an email about scheduling today, so we will have more.
Oh, did you? I haven't seen that.
That's fine. It was literally right before we started, because I just thought of it, so we'll have more information for you on when that'll be soon. We need to figure out what's happening with Josh's Talksplode also, so we can schedule all these things properly. But that'll be coming to you soon at some point in the next few weeks.
I do a podcast called Science Sort Of. We talk about science. We drink beer. It's supposed to be a fun time. It's a lot of work, but I do it, and I love it. So check that out if you are so inclined. The end.
And I promised information on this last week, and now I have it. The Tripwire Awards are currently going on. You can vote for the Tripwire Awards. Anyone can vote, and I would ask you to consider voting for Bill Sienkiewicz, Revolution Volume 1, in the Best Collection category. It's a book that I worked on, very proud of. And the winners will be announced on Saturday, May 2nd, 2020, at the Portsmouth Comic Con. And the voting will be open until April 30th. So you've got another 2 months of voting. Maybe I won't talk about it every show, but you got 2 more months to vote for the Tripwire Awards. I'll keep the link in the show notes, even if I don't talk about it, but you can do that until the end of April. And then if May 2nd, if you happen to be at the Portsmouth Comic Con, that's where they'll be announcing the Tripwire Awards. Head over to fanboy.com. You can find the show notes where to vote for the Tripwire Awards. You can find all of our podcasts. You can find everything you need over there. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy and following @ifanboy on Twitter and following @ifanboycomics on Instagram. That's where you can find the Best of the Week in Panels feature, in which many of the things we referenced today are shown on that this week. Individually, we are C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram, J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and Ryan is Ryan Haupt on Instagram and Haupt on Twitter. That's H-A-U-P-T.
That's true. Follow me on Instagram if you want photos of the things I cook and the new cute dog I got last month.
Everyone loves dog content, so you're good.
Clementine is here to soothe your dog needs. She's so stinking cute. I tell her every day that I'm just going to kill her for being so freaking cute.
Well, that's dark.
It is. Well, you know, sometimes things are too cute to live. And hopped on Twitter.
Are you the one who's gone delirious from the heat?
Stormtroopers hitting the ground.
Oh my God.
And helped on Twitter is I've gotten real salty about academia and academic life. So two very divergent avenues of my
watch Ryan torch's career on Twitter.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be glorious. And then I'll rise like a phoenix from the ashes. Me and Clementine coming at you. if you dig this show, you can write a review or leave a star rating on iTunes. It's really easy to do. You don't need to like put in a ton of thought and energy into how you write a review. Just like one or two sentences. This is why I listen to the show every week. This is why I like it. This is what it means to me. 5 stars. I will insist on the 5-star part, though. You have to do that. Another huge thing is telling your friends about podcasts. People don't come to podcasts organically that often. And when they do, they're constantly looking for recommendations. So telling your friends about iFanboy is a really important way to get the word out about the show.
Sort of in any podcast you listen to.
Yeah, any podcast you love. Unless they're produced by a giant corporation, they don't have a marketing budget. So you are the marketing budget.
Then screw them.
And yeah, go screw to channel Josh for a second. So spread the iFanboy love. Just tell everyone. Moms love iFanboy. That's the word around here, and it's really important. And so just spread it out there.
Thank you. So thanks to Ryan for joining us as Josh is off. Definitely not burying the bodies of pollsters who keep knocking on his doors.
In the script, it says I'm supposed to say at this point, I'm Connor.
That's true. I don't know why it says that there. Oh, because there's no separation. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. People.
I could be Connor.
There was an error in last week's script in which we didn't, I'm going to say we, but I didn't write it. Josh didn't change the number of the show, so we said it was the wrong show number at the top.
We've all been there.
I'll just read whatever you put in front of me, like Ron
Burgundy?
Burgundy. All right. I'm going to go lay down in a bath of ice, and sorry for the weird energy, and we'll be back to normal when the temperature is. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Connor. I mean, I'm Ryan.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.